Good morning. You're listening to the Expressive Arts Collective.
Good morning.
We are your hosts. I'm Sugathi Rupin, licensed marriage and family therapist and expressive arts therapist.
And I'm Christian David Starr. So I decided to use my middle name today. And I am
He's
a licensed.
So fancy.
I know.
Oh. Yes.
Sorry, I never heard that. You're licensed.
I was going to jump into that song.
I'm so fancy, don't even know.
And I forgot who sang it, so. Anywho's, my name is Christian Starnes. Hi, I'm licensed, come to find out. No, I'm a marriage and family therapist. And yeah, I love mental health and art.
Yeah. So today we're going to be talking about dreams.
Ooh.
All things dreams. So I don't know if it's a common known, what you call it, therapeutic intervention to do like dream analysis,
yeah,
dream work, but it's a thing.
Yeah.
Christian, do you want to talk a little bit about the history of dream analysis?
Yeah. You know, I apologize also with the coughing. Allergies and asthma, I'm going to try to keep it on the DL with the coughing. But yeah, so dream analysis, pretty much in all cultures, there's been a long-standing analyzing of dreams, especially with, I believe, like Native American cultures, just everywhere, dating back to the beginning of time, because people always dreamed. Now, people didn't know what they were doing was dreaming. So a lot of times it was just these strange stories when you slept, or people really believed that they were telling the future, fortune, so forth. And so there's a lot of thoughts and theories around it. But when Freud at one point decided he wanted to analyze people's dreams, and I was trained in Jungian dream analysis.
As was I.
Holla. And Carl Jung was a student of Freud's. And what set him apart from Freud, from my understanding, ultimately was he kept saying, but where is the collective unconscious? What about the soul, the spirit?
Mm-hmm.
What about all these, you know, that connects us?
Yeah. Jung's father was a pastor.
That's he.
Yeah. Which may have influenced his interest in kind of like a spirituality.
Yeah.
Whereas Freud was very much like about like biology.
And cocaine. Yeah.
Yes, yeah. Yes, that as well.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because Freud was more, I think, influenced by Darwin.
Yeah.
And then Jung comes along and wants to sort of break off from Freud because of, right, where's the soul? Where's that collective unconscious? Where do you create meaning
mm-hmm.
for your life?
There's just
question.
Too much. Which is a Freud phrase or word, synchronicity. There's just too much coincidence, synchronicity in the world to just say, oh, it's random. Now, random does occur, and then we look to science for what is it, the string theory, butterfly theory, all that jazz. Like, we have ideas, but of course, like anything, we don't have like 100%, and now we know because the creation of everything. But essentially, Jung took dream analysis and kind of went a little bit further with it. It was less about, I think with Freud, it was more about, oh, that's about your, you know, mother, father. It's very literal type of stuff. And it's always like a drive, one of the drives, the ego and the sex drive.
The id,
you know. And there's, those things are helpful, but I think of it like a gumbo, a possibility that it's just part of the ingredients. There's so much more from a psychological standpoint that these guys were very creative, having creativity to kind of spitball what else is there about your dreams. So with Jung, he was more about, from my understanding, it's not so literal. It's much more about imagery, themes, archetypes, and precognition dreams. So dreams that can maybe tell you something, like you tapped into this collective energy of the human experience, kind of like how dolphins, I always compare it to this. That's very nice.
Thank you.
Dolphins, believe it or not, communicate, what is it like? I don't know, like a ton of miles apart through vibrations in the water to one another. And so they do that, and you can pick up the vibration because it's in water, so it's vibrating, you know. But humans, we give off energy. Sixth sense, I don't know. It's hard to explain, but there's so much to the human experience that we don't have answers for. So Jung found that and he traveled all over the world in different cultures, and this is before, getting on a plane wasn't as accessible as it is now. Video photography, that's not a big to-do thing happening around this time. So it's not like people were influenced in the deeps of the Amazon jungle by watching actual Amazon Prime. but he found, oh my God, they have the same archetypes as the people over in Ireland do, or the people over in Idaho have. Why? How? They've never met any other communities in the world. They're completely isolated in the deeps of the jungle, but yet there's this collective, and he pointed the collective unconscious. There must be something going on out of our awareness that connects us all together, much like dolphins vibrating through the ocean. Probably a terrible analogy, but it's the only one I got. And we just stumbled upon how they can communicate. Well, we're still trying to believe and or figure out how we can communicate.
You know this?
Oh, Joseph Campbell. Oh man, do talk more up.
Well, so as Christian was sharing, what popped up for me was a book written by Joseph Campbell called The Hero with 1,000 Faces, which goes more into depth about the collective unconscious and how all these different communities have these similar archetypes throughout their traditions. So anyway, it's a really interesting book.
Yeah.
And it can be helpful to read. Joseph Campbell, I don't know if he was a student of Jung, but he has written just a ton about
very
Jung's work, right?
If not from a philosophical standpoint of study of psychology, but yeah, very much intertwined.
So reading books by Joseph Campbell might be helpful with working with your dreams to have a deeper understanding of archetypes.
Yeah.
And the collective unconscious and how that works. Anyway, that was just a little tangent on my end.
And just, again, books and videos. And a very, I know a lot of people that have read them. I haven't gotten to dive into Joseph Campbell, although I am familiar. But friends that have, like, just some of his talks have changed their lives and how they kind of organize and make sense of their own experience. And so archetypes also, you know, like the lovers.
Let's explain archetypes because folks listening might not know what that means exactly. So go for it. You're about to.
I jump in. I think I got it. Part of me is like, it's such a weird word, like archetype. Like what does that, how do you define that exactly? But for instance, Commedia dell'arte, in the creative arts, we're all archetypes. And so in all cultures, we have these tropes. The lovers, the fool, the jokester. They may have different names. The wise elder,
The hero, the king, the queen, the wise sage.
Yeah, healer.
Fairy godmother. That's kind of more specific, but like.
Yeah, child, a devil, a demon, whatever it may be. This. In different cultures have different words and different maybe understandings of what, like if I say evil, Sue and I will have two different, we'll know what we're referring to. That's part of that collective unconsciousness. But if I share what I feel and think evil is, and then she shares what that is, that shows that we're having our own experience of it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the component. And And that's what was happening when Jung traveled all over the world to study just human behavior, that people had these tropes, these
archetypes.
Archetypes in their culture and their family systems, like we call it in the Western culture, and other places, maybe it's in their tribe, you know?
Mm-hmm. So here's the definition. A recurrent symbol or motif in literature, art, or mythology.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
When it says about symbol, motif, could it be like literally a symbol, like an Egyptian ankh, I think it is? But that's more of a... Maybe it's not, that's where I get tripped up on it, of like, is it symbolic, the horns is the devil, and maybe that's the archetype, like a visual of the horns.
As a symbol?
Yeah.
I think of archetype as being like the bigger umbrella definition, and then the symbol would be like the imagery that goes with it.
Okay.
So like if you and I were to be like, okay, let's go with evil. What's the image that pops into your head?
Right.
But, you know, knowing that we're both, like, Americans, you know, like, where we're from, we would probably have very similar imagery or symbols that would pop up in our head that would read as evil.
And that wouldn't necessarily be synchronicity or whatnot. It's because it's otherwise explained because we're from the same area, I think that's where it trips me up, and some other people I know get tripped up with the word archetype, because I think of hero, the loser or whatnot, and it's got to be like an embodiment of a person or a type. But I get it now with like symbols and things like that. It's whatever representation of these very rooted in the human experience of types.
Mm-hmm.
We all fall into them at different times too, which is interesting. Mm-hmm. And they show up in your dreams.
Mm-hmm. They do show up in your dreams. And it can show up as actual characters. It can show up as imagery. It could show up as a color. It could show up in a lot of different ways. So when you're dreaming, you're like, oh, that's weird imagery. Why did I have a flamingo on a battlefield with Napoleon riding a donkey?
Oh, my God.
We're there.
You were there.
That seems so weird. When we start to do dream work and we start to look at, well, what are the associations to these things that seem random? What's the archetypes that go with them? And then how do you create meaning from that? Suddenly, you can have a big aha about what's going on with you in your unconscious by paying attention, where... You know, you might just write it off as, oh, that's a silly dream, but it actually might have some really powerful underlying meaning.
Yeah, yeah. That's what, when I took this workshop for Jungian dream analysis when I was in grad school, I thought, oh, that's cool. All right, great. And get into it. And you had to pick a dream that you've had.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, I don't know what to pick, because I've had recurring dreams.
Mm-hmm, so have I. Yeah.
In the past, I'm having one now that I'll maybe bring up.
Okay.
Got some time. It involves grad school, getting my MFA.
Oh.
But I had a dream before I went off actually to grad school to get my MFA. Excuse me. And I was like, okay, I'll pick that one to analyze. I thought it was just simple, stupid, it was weird, and it had violence in it, it had aliens, it had, at the time, my girlfriend, in my parents' backyard, and having a choice between the aliens getting us, or having to kind of end it for ourselves,
Sounds like a real juicy dream.
It was juicy, and what I learned was, for instance, themes. You want to look at the themes, subtext, all that good stuff. And in it was a gun, okay? And I picked, okay, I'll pick that for this workshop, the gun. And you take either the feeling in the dream, or theme, or something that was in it, a person, place, color. And from that, you just brainstorm any associations that you have to that thing. So with a gun, I wrote down things like hard, metal, steel, freedom, finality, rebel, cold, you know, whatever, association to the gun, blah, blah, blah. And then I looked at why this dream, why now? And you can analyze a dream for years.
Oh, absolutely. And I'm pretty sure that's like a Jungian thing to analyze a dream for years.
Yeah.
There's some, I remember one of my therapists who was trained in Jungian told me something to the effect of like, you can look at your dream now, but you might not have all the information right now because it's still like sort of buried deep within you. But if you revisit the dream in 5 years, you actually will have way more understanding about what that dream was about 5 years from now. So she was a big fan of writing down every dream. Yes. And if you think it's silly and you're like, oh, this means nothing, just wait 5 years and then review that. And you might have some really big ahas about what's going on in your life or what was going on in your life then.
That was exactly what this dream was. This dream I had in 2009. And I remembered it because it was so vivid, and I just never had a dream like it before, and it was just weird, and I don't know, it just stuck out. And when I analyzed it, and I really did write it off, like, okay, it's just aliens, and maybe it's about change, you know? But I wrote it off, and this, when I analyzed it in this class, was 2016 or 2017. And through that workshop of going through, and there's steps, and I'll give you the name of an author that's really good about how you can do this for yourself. Through this, what I found was not just about, oh, change is coming. That's what I thought on the surface. I'm like, I got it. That's what the dream is. I'm there with my girlfriend at the time. That's a representation of me or something. Mm-hmm. And changes. I'm at my parents' house. There's aliens coming. I'm about ready to go to grad school. I've got a gun. You know, it was either the aliens or I get a choice. You think you're picking up what I'm putting down in the dream there. And it was disturbing to me that this was what occurred. And in the dream, I decided to take measures into my own hands. I wasn't gonna let the aliens get me. And I remember in the dream that at one point I slumped over in the dream and I was afraid that I didn't do it right. And my hearing was foggy. I was still able to think. And I was like, you know, but I'm here, but I think it's still gonna be okay. So after I analyzed the dream, and you'll know when you hit the meaning. You look at books, you Google things, you ask friends only to get your juices flowing of ideas that you go, oh my God, yes, you'll feel it.
You will totally feel it. You might break out into tears when it happens. You're like, oh, associations, blah, blah, blah. And then all of a sudden, bam, it's like a zinger.
It is.
And you'll be like, oh, or like a punch in the gut almost like, oh, there it is.
The best way I can describe it, it happened in that class, and I did burst into tears, and I sat back and laughed hysterically. And it was, oh my God, I was trying to tell myself, Chris, you're gonna be okay. We got your back, no matter what happens, no matter what happens with this relationship, with your parents, with this time in your life, with school, with being an actor, with meeting new people, with all this big personal change. This was like a big, you know, shift in my life of what the next chapter to come. It was me telling myself, no matter what you do or choose, you're gonna be okay, I got you, we're gonna do this together. And I had been working my whole life up to that point, if I look back, and more intentionally, in those last 7 years, to create that sense within myself, a sense of safety, a sense that of a secure attachment, right? And that I'm okay when I move in the world, I can do hard things and I'm gonna be okay. I can take care of myself. I can be kind to myself. And no matter what, you're gonna survive. And this wasn't it really was through analyzing this, and it just came to me, that's what this meant. And I literally had this feeling from head to toe of relaxation, as if, and the visualization of like all the minions or whatever going, ah, finally you heard us. Okay, we can go home now.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
This relief.
Yes.
That finally it felt sense, connection. You're gonna be okay, because we tell ourselves that. And we know it intellectually, because we have factual evidence to point to, but that doesn't matter if we don't feel the connection.
Which goes back to healing trauma through imagery, through metaphor, through
yes,
this queen. Called integration, right? Because mm-hmm. when we have trauma, it's almost like we have, we split in many different ways. It's kind of like we have all these different archetypes that are trying to like work against each other almost, right?
Yeah.
But like healing trauma is all about integrating all these different parts of self, all these different experiences, finding our strength, feeling empowered in it. I don't know where I was going with this.
That integration.
Well, yeah.
And mind then, and body
exactly.
connected.
And yeah. like in your mind, you can be like, I'm fine, I'm safe, but your body is still reacting until that integration happens and your body can actually have like real restorative rest. So in that moment, it sounds like the integration happened
yeah.
where you were able to have that like deep sigh, that relief that happens when we get those like ahas and we have that meaning for ourselves.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And for the science people out there too, if it's, this is all also, you know, tangible evidence behind these things where we create a new neural network, neural pathway. We know one thing, but I feel another. I know you say you love me, but I don't feel it. I know I'm a good person, but I don't believe it, right? Something's fragmented, getting in the way, and we have to integrate it through creating new neural pathways. And there's many different ways. And I think that's what happened for me. And it came at the right time. Because if I wasn't in my own therapeutic work prior to that, because this was the irony, that dream was, like I said, 2009, when I was going off to get my MFA in acting. Because that was when I was performing and I was like, you know, I want to maybe become a professor and teach. Then years later, through life changes and a change of self, a rebirth of self, I was like, you know, I want to be a therapist. I want to, and you know, and so I was in probably my first or second semester of my master's for clinical psychology in 2016 is where I analyzed this dream.
Mm-hmm.
And in between that was doing all this work on myself that I feel like I was able to have that come forward
mm-hmm.
from the archives of my mind.
Because
mm-hmm. we're computers, we are. It's not a coincidence that computers are, everything's designed and modeled after the human body. I mean, even, you know, windows, symmetry, eyes, face, nose, mouth. We collect all this information and store it in our sub and preconscious. And when it comes more to the surface and makes that connection, the resolution can happen into consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? We're throwing a lot of things at you, but...
Yeah, and as we're chatting, I'm like, dang, dream analysis is so intense and has so many layers and is so complex, and we can look at it from a lot of different angles. We can look at it more on the Jungian,
mm-hmm.
like spiritual, collective unconscious side, archetype side, but then we could totally get into, well, I'm not an expert on the neuroscience of dreams, but I know that there's been a lot of research on dreams and wellness. So if this is at all interesting to you, I highly recommend you get out there, Google stuff, especially if you're into more of like the neuroscience part.
Yeah.
I wish I knew more about the neuroscience of dreams, but I think dreams are fascinating. I first got into dreams, oh gosh, what year would that have been? 2009? I went to a community group that it wasn't a therapy group. It was just like it was actually more of a spiritual group. And they were like, you know, let's look at our dreams as a group for sort of like spiritual healing, not necessarily mental health related.
Mm.
So I went to the group and I was like, okay, I'm interested. And then I was like, holy crap, this is powerful. And I had so many ahas from that. And at the same time, I was seeing a therapist that brought in a lot of creative. This is the therapist that was trained in Jungian.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe she even suggested that I go do this group to work through dreams. I don't quite remember. But anyway, it was all around the same time where I'm seeing this creative therapist that's trained in Jungian, where I'm doing Santre, I'm doing paintings, I'm doing drawings. We're talking about archetypes, all that jazz, and I'm taking this dream group, and it was just phenomenal, and I had so many big ahas that it was a part of the push to want to become an expressive arts therapist. I think I've talked about this before, that I had seen other therapists, like CBT therapists, and like it kind of helped, but it didn't quite go to the depth that I needed.
Yeah.
And then when I started seeing this therapist that brought in the creativity, brought in the Jungian, the unconscious work, the attachment work, the trauma work that ends up happening, everything changed for me.
Yeah.
It was like a radical shift towards wellness, and that was what really pushed me to, like, I want to be able to give this to other people.
Yeah.
Because I think most people think therapy is like CBT, and there's this whole other world of depth to help folks heal themselves.
Yeah.
It's that juicy.
Juicy. Yeah, it's, and there's no, I always say this, not to downplay, mock, or send a negative light to anything that is mystical or magical, but I know that a lot of people, myself included, I want something that it's like, is this gonna help me? I wanna know. I don't want it to be just blind faith and just, you know, lying to myself or whatever. So I pivot to, is there some science in this? Is there some evidence? Or is this just wishful thinking or whatnot?
Mm-hmm.
So I often say there's no magic in any of this stuff. Even when we're talking about the collective unconsciousness, it is pretty magical. I mean, the fact that we're alive is pretty damn magical. If you want to talk about what, you know, the unknown and magic and magical.
Alive is a miracle.
You know, it's not illusions. It's not, you know, sleight of hand. There's no tricks in this, I guess, is more what I'm getting at, is you do have information inside of you and around you that you are not privy to, aware of, or have access to at this time, all the time, or sometimes.
Which makes me think of, so in some therapeutic orientations, the therapist is not seen as the expert.
Yeah.
The expert is actually you, the client, because there's a belief that you have this whole world of untapped knowledge that you don't even know exists within you. And it's our job as therapists to help lead you towards your own aware, your own knowledge.
Revolution of
exactly.
self.
Exactly, yeah.
Evolution and revolution, you know?
Yeah, which goes along with this, that when you get into your dreams and you realize, oh wow, my unconscious or subconscious is giving me all these images, if I'm actually trying to heal myself through dreams, it can be really empowering.
Yeah. And to your point of like with the neuroscience along with it, which I just love to know how things work, you know? So REM sleep, rapid eye movement there, your brain waves, the brain goes into different wave lengths, I guess is what they call it.
Yes.
Like alpha, beta, theta.
Yes.
Delta 99. No, I just wanted to do a cheer for some reason. But different wavelengths and different levels of accessibility. So kind of like this pre-conscious place, like when you meditate and you get into this trance place, what they find is you get a different kind of rest than you do when you sleep. So do those, you know, 1 minute, 2 minute point meditations just to, you know, between study breaks or work breaks. But that's a little off topic. But with sleep, what they're discovering when they're watching the brain light up, the different areas, it's darting back and forth. Right side of your brain is where implicit memory is, emotional memory is housed, left side of your brain is more cognitive, so concrete, like, oh, I remember that shirt. Oh, I remember that time. Or, oh, that doesn't bother me anymore. When I got, you know, when you punched me in the back, I remember that, but I don't feel bad about that anymore. There's a resolution. That's because information from the right side of your brain created a neural pathway to the left side of your brain and finalized. So, in sleep, that's where the saying comes from, oh, you'll feel better tomorrow when you sleep on it, is because when you are sleeping, you are organizing the day. You are defragmenting the computer.
Mm-hmm.
Your little librarian's putting all the shit away on the shelf.
Mm-hmm. And when you sleep, so REM, right? When you dream, you're in REM, and your eyes actually go back and forth. So you get bilateral stimulation, which helps with this refiling and reprocessing and sort of making sense of your day.
Yeah, that's
with the eyes moving back and forth. And then
the moneymaker.
And that's directly like connected to trauma-informed practices like EMDR and accelerated resolution therapy, where we use the bilateral stimulation to help reprocess trauma.
Right.
So it's like, it's kind of like every night when you go night-night and you're dreaming, you're kind of reprocessing the trauma of the day in a way. Or, you know, disturbances of the day, issues of the day.
And that's why you feel better. Not just because, well, I'm rested or I've had some time from the incident. Yeah, those are byproducts of the experience. No, it's because of the bilateral stimulation that naturally occurs for humans in REM sleep. And it's why when people are sleep deprived and not going into REM sleep, you can go into a psychosis.
Yeah. If you're not getting that restorative rest.
Yeah, and all the background info gets all muddly, doubled in, mm-hmm. and so forth. But with EMDR and ART, as you mentioned, those are kind of like an active imagination while you're conscious and utilizing the reparative mechanism of bilateral stimulation of the brain, which is super cool.
It's super cool. Super cool. So ART to me is super close. So I've never done EMDR personally, but I've done ART and I've trained in it. So to me, it's like dream work meets active imagination with the eye movements. So it's like, I think it's really juicy because it's kind of like we're doing dream work, like active dream work.
Yeah.
To process things. I love it.
I would say EMDR is I trained in EMDR, have also been the patient with the EMDR, and I've had ART done as a client, as a patient on me one time. And they're different, but incredibly similar. And both, I think, are, perhaps the protocols are more imaginative base from the get-go with ART, I think. EMDR has some set steps within the structure where you get to do the imagination and play and all these things. So I think it probably depends on the person, what they, and this is just my opinion right now, depends on what works for that person in their mind of like where they want to kind of play.
Mm-hmm.
Against.
Yeah.
Starting this way or starting that way.
Yeah.
But that's where trauma, when people have PTSD, one of the possible qualifiers is recurring dreams or nightmares or disturbing dreams. It's because we're going through this neural loop without the finalization. In the neural network, we're completely in that implicit emotional memory without a sense of resolution because it hasn't moved to the other side.
Mm-hmm. It hasn't been like filed. The little librarians haven't filed it yet.
Yes, yes.
So it's just like hanging out on repeat, being very disturbing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And depending on the level of the experience of it being traumatizing, and it's subjected to the person and their body and so forth, you'll need something perhaps more intentional, like EMDR, ART, to get to it a lot faster. But also, that's why talk therapy works also. You're talking through things and having these epiphanies that attach the emotional experience with a cognitive, concrete language. Mm-hmm. So that kind of all comes together. There's all these different ways. And that's why when I was analyzing my own dream, mm-hmm. I was able to come to a cathartic, finite resolution. It was close enough to the surface that I could bring it all together.
Mm-hmm. Can we jump back to talking about PTSD and nightmares?
Mm-hmm.
I just want to say that using dream work with PTSD probably, you know, would not be considered an evidence-based practice. However, I have found it to be incredibly helpful for folks who, with talk therapy, it's very difficult to talk about the actual thing that happened because there's so much avoidance, don't even want to go there. But then all that implicit memory, the feeling, the fear, you know, whatever it is, it's coming up in those dreams. So it's hard to ignore it when it's coming up all the time.
Yeah.
So sometimes going at it through the metaphors, through the archetypes, gives that psychic distance so it's not as overwhelmed. We're not talking about the actual thing. We're talking about the alligator in the river that's coming after me. Or we're talking about, you know, the swarm of bees that are chasing me, right?
Yeah, I've done some Santray, and I think that's kind of where some of that comes into play.
Absolutely.
You know, it's like a little bit of space, it becomes the character.
Yes. So it's a way of like externalizing it, but you're using the material that's coming from people's dreams, so it has that personal meaning for them. But it can sometimes be an easier way to talk about things besides going straight to, you know, these are the facts of what happened.
Yeah.
You know? And I've had a lot of folks have a lot of great ahas and be able to actually get into their emotions and process those emotions by doing dream work.
So many, it's reminded me of what Paul McCartney said. I think a lot of melodies and lyrics came to him in his dreams.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not surprised, but yeah.
And I think it's probably also because when we are conscious and intentional, it's like, it's hard to come up. It's hard to get out of our own way.
Yes, totally.
And be a little bit more of a passenger to possibility.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think he probably just has like, you know, he has clearly a great creative mind when it comes to sound and story.
Yeah, I wonder if that happens for a lot of creatives, like writers. I wonder if their stories come to them as a dream, and it's so fascinating that they write it down and it becomes the stories that they tell, you know?
Yeah, yeah. I don't know if, I'm thinking of Barbie, and then it made me think of, was it Oppenheimer?
Oh, uh-huh.
And then Christopher Nolan led me to Inception. I love a good 6 degrees. But like this Inception of invading people's dreams to get information. Are you dreaming? Are you not? What's lucid dreaming? There's just so many. I wonder where Christopher Nolan might have gotten the idea for that movie. Was it in his dreams?
Mm-hmm.
There's just so much accessible healing around us that it is also completely normal and understandable that it's hard to notice and acknowledge and feel that. And that's why having someone as a passenger or a little guide, a companion
for the journey,
mm-hmm. to help sit on the outside to go, what about this? How about this? Huh? What I was wondering about this. What do you think about that? Interpretations, all that stuff. That's what it's about. And then you get to be the master of your experience because you know the best. You take all this information and tools, the hero, and you decide what comes of it and what's useful, what isn't.
Yeah, so going off of that idea, can we talk about what happens with recurring dreams as mm-hmm. as we heal and get better sort of in like our waking life? what happens to those recurring dreams, because it's fascinating.
Oh my gosh, please do.
And it totally is very similar to Santre, because Santre is another Jungian intervention that can be really, really similar, because you're using archetypes in a play space, you know, and seeing how
scenarios.
Exactly. And... so it's similar. Anyway, okay, so here's some juicy info about how dreams can change and how you can track your progress towards like wellness mentally, emotionally, physically is through your dream. So if you have a recurring dream, it's important to pay attention to it, because it's like your brain keeps showing you the same thing
for a
reason.
I need to take notes on this one, because I mentioned to you when I got here, I have a recurring dream.
Yeah.
And last night was the first time it actually changed. So
this is a big deal.
This is experiential right now. Yes.
This is a big deal.
So hit me, sunshine. I'm ready for it.
Okay. Okay.
Ooh, we need some making my dreams come true. Hall of Notes. Continue. I'm 42.
Okay. So, if you're in therapy, or just, you know, if you're getting better, making progress in your life, your dreams are going to change. So would you like a personal story?
Yes.
All right. So in 2009, I had a recurring dream that felt very disturbing to me. And so this is when I was seeing the creative therapist that was like into analyzing dreams. I was doing that dream group. Anyway,
cool.
So I had no idea why I was continuing to have this dream, and I would wake up really dysregulated because it was very disturbing. So I saw that creative therapist probably over a year, and we were working on things like, how do you set boundaries? How do you communicate? How do you emotionally regulate? A lot of work around attachment and self-esteem. And so this dream where I would be a victim and would avoid the situation. I would run away from a distressing event in the dream. Always run away. And then I would have all this guilt that I ran away, or shame that I ran away in the dream. And over time, I started staying. And not only staying, but then I started standing up for myself in the dream. And then not only did I stand up for myself, but I was like the assertive one in the dream. So over this year working with this therapist, I continued to have the same dream, but it would shift. And it is that me as a character in my dream became much more empowered, to where I was the one that was in control in the dream, instead of feeling just like the helpless victim and like super shut down. And like all I could do was run away. You know, fight, flight, freeze. It was definitely like a flight and freeze situation in the dream, where I became like the fighter in the dream.
Yeah.
Standing my ground and actually pushing the bad guys out, and like being the intimidating one towards the bad guys. So they didn't even like try to mess with me in my dream. So, and it was real juicy. So working with this therapist who was into dream work, she's like reflecting back, like, holy shit, how do you feel this shift in, you know, feeling empowered in your waking life? And I was like, oh, I do feel better. I can set boundaries. I can say no to people. I do have a better sense of self.
It's not a confirmation.
Yeah.
On a level that to me, it feels like as if somebody very trustworthy came in and said yes now.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
So that, and apparently that's the thing, what she shared with me, because she was all into Jungian. She said that's a thing. And not only will that happen in your dreams, but that'll happen in your Santres. So over time, if you do Santre all the time, you always want to take a picture of your Santre, because you'll notice that the same themes will come up in the Santre, but over time, as you do your work and you get better, your Santres are going to change, just like your dream themes are going to change. Right. So you said you had this recurring dream.
Yes.
You don't have to give us the details if you don't want to, but I'm curious about, you noticed a change last night.
Yeah, it's very interesting. I'll try to make it short of it started, I want to say, at least a year ago, if not a couple years. It's hard to say now. So I was assigned female at birth, transitioned 2 years ago medically, and started taking testosterone. And so I think it was before that happened, but So when I have an MFA, and there is a 12 other actors that were with me in my cohort, and it's a 3-year program. We all went through, and you can be eliminated if you're not doing as well as they think you should or whatnot.
The pressure, my God.
Every year, you're on the chopping block to be let go from the program and not get your degree. I was not one of those people. I got my degree. I made it all 3 years. I wasn't ever in a limbo. But in my dream, I am. In my dream, I go back to that time at University of Iowa, and it's the same, like, 4 or 5 people that got invited back for the final year, and I wasn't one of them. Mm-hmm. And I'm there, though, kind of going, oh, hi, to those people. I see them in movement class with Paul, or I see, you know, John walking around, and I'm like, oh, hey, I'm just here getting my stuff to leave. And there's this sadness and disappointment, and it's just kind of this over and over again. And last night was the first time that here I am back at the University of Iowa, same thing happened. This was the first time that I looked like how I do now with a beard, transitioned, and people in the dream commented on it and recognized it. Mm-hmm. And so I'm not, because part of me at face value is like, I feel like there's a part of me that's like, why I'm having this is because some of the people I went to school with, they're still professors or teaching, or they are doing really well in commercials or acting still and doing this or that. And I feel kind of disappointed that I didn't pursue that to get what I wanted, but I didn't like the pursuing part. I didn't like the process. I wanted the product, but I didn't enjoy the process whole lot. But I also am glad that I have the life I have, but I feel like maybe there's that in there. And then throwing in that part where in the dream, I think we were watching a movie in one of the theaters there, and I was like, oh, I gotta hurry up and get back to my seat. And I've got my beard, I'm transitioned, and I've got some candy or something. And there's a few people, like, the point of me is getting back into the main theater when they're starting the show, the play, I guess. And a few people that I knew back then who were in undergrad or were also grad students going, hey, Chris, hey, oh, you look great. Oh, I heard you transition. Oh, you know, it's positive. But I'm still trying to get into something or get somewhere that I'm not invited to. Yeah. And I wake up forgetting every time. And part of me still is like, did I graduate? Did I get my 3-year degree? Did I accomplish it? I feel like I didn't accomplish it. Mm-hmm. And I think part of it might be because I was a woman then. I was a fine woman. But I was, you know, I was in drag, but you know, I was Christy. I was, you know, and it's this part of self, this identity, you know, and that, and being an actor and a woman, which totally was saying out loud is hilarious to me. Of like, no wonder. Hello, kid. You're pretending to be. Your whole life was make believe.
Yeah,
it really was.
Whole life, you were a character.
Yeah. And now I'm me, and it's like, how do I live? What do I do? And I feel like maybe part of me is trying to get back. I miss the easiness of that time. That's what I assumed. It was a little It wasn't easy then. Oh, God, no. It was so hard. Life was hard, you know. Started therapy, started all these, you know, figuring out what was going on with my anxieties. It was, you know, went through a really bad breakup. Was in a really competitive, difficult, you know, getting a degree. But in hindsight, you know, the grass is always greener. In the past, things were simpler because I was in a container of school. Mm-hmm. So I was assuming that's why I keep having this dream. I miss the simplicity of, you know, we did a show, let's go out and have some drinks and have some fun, whatever, you know, and life is coming and so much more is hopeful or whatever. But I don't know. What do you think, Sue?
About your dream?
Yeah.
Well, so as you were sharing, I was thinking this, that the way I was trying to do dreams is that I would never tell you what I think your dream means.
Oh, crap.
I would just give you, I would ask you a question so that you come up with the meaning on your own and that you make your own ahas and your own connections.
Yeah.
Because I'm not the expert of your imagery. You are.
Right.
So you need to know, you got to come to that conclusion for yourself. But I was thinking it might be fun with our last few minutes to do a little dream work. Would that be okay?
Yes. Oh my God, please.
Okay. So I use this workbook for dreams, and of course I can't think of what the title of it is, but it gives some structure about how to go about exploring your dreams. So the first thing that we do is I have you write out, like, what were the colors that you saw, what were the themes, and then if you could pick three feeling words or three emotions for the dream, mm-hmm. what are those three emotions that you experienced?
Oh, yeah. I would say color-wise, there's a lot of red.
Mm-hmm.
Trying to get a thing here. Red, I think red, brown, and yellow. Blue. More red, blue, and yellow kicks out in my head.
Okay, so then we would do a little brainstorm. So when you do dream work, there's so many ways you can go about it. So many layers. So this is just like an easy way to get started. But we would brainstorm some words, some associations that you have with those words.
Okay.
So that's one thing you could do. But then also paying attention to what are those three emotions.
Three emotions.
Which I think might be juicier.
Yeah.
So what are those three emotions that really stand out for this dream?
I guess I'll kind of spitball a couple of things, because I don't know. There's a sense of longing, this reminiscent kind of sadness there. There's some anxiety, anticipation, you know, because I was like, I got to get into the seat. I got to get out of here. I don't go to school here anymore. And then there's some shame because I wasn't good enough to be invited back.
Mm-hmm. And so out of those, so take a breath.
Yeah.
Take a breath. So, we could go deeper into that. So as an example for folks out there, you could go deeper in that. You could start journaling about those emotions that are coming up. And you journal, stream of conscious. Mm-hmm. And so you get to that aha zinger moment where you're like, oh, there's the golden nugget, which we don't have time to do today. But that would be a place to start. Another interesting thing is that your brain likes a play on words. So another intervention that you can do with your dreams is to look for the puns or the play on words in your dreams. So recalling your dreams, are there any puns or any like play on words that you notice? And you like puns.
I do.
So I could see you having puns in your dreams.
There was, I can't think of anything outright, but there's something about me at a corkboard with a bunch of pictures that were up from people. We used to do the theater bar crawl. One year was Dionysus shirts. Oh, we're dorks. And I was like, oh, it's so-and-so, and oh, there, and corkboard pictures of the past. Even though I was also standing next to some of the people in the pictures, it was like past, present, happening at the same time. I don't know if there was any puns. There must have been, actually, because there was one moment in the dream where it was like as if I got backstage somewhere I wasn't supposed to be, and the crew were also like, it was like a secondary crew. It had this like Guys and Dolls kind of gangstery vibe.
Uh-huh.
And like a woman in charge of them all. And I was like, I gotta get back to my seat and I need some snacks. Can I take these snacks? And they're like, yeah, doll, you're cute. You can take these snacks. Like, thanks. But I felt like I shouldn't be there. And I was like, okay, I hope they're not angry at me. They look a little rough. And I'm like trying to get through the costume department to get in the theater to my seat. I can't think of anything else that, any puns or words in it.
Okay, that was just a suggestion. Sometimes that can help.
Yeah,
and
that's
then,
cool,
and then
though.
That can,
I love that.
And then that can draw attention to, like, a different theme that maybe, you know, you weren't paying attention to before, but it's another piece of the puzzle that might be helpful.
Yeah.
So the reason I asked you about the colors mm-hmm. is because Jung has a color chart that goes with dreams.
Ooh.
So you said red was a big dream, right?
Red and blue were the big ones, yeah, I'd say.
Okay, so I'm going to read you some of these statements, and you tell me if any of them ring true.
Okay.
Now, we're on the radio, so you don't have to tell me why they ring true, unless you really want to get into it. But I'm just going to read you red. All right, so I feel intense, vital, or animated.
Mm-hmm.
I feel transformed. I feel mm-hmm. assertive, forceful. I feel creative. I want to live a life to its fullest.
Oh, man.
I want to win, succeed, achieve. I feel sexy or have strong sexual urges. I have a driving desire. I need something to make me feel alive again.
Oh.
I need to be more assertive and forceful. I need to get out and enjoy myself. Oh, and then it cuts off. There's another one. It cuts off about if red appears as blood. But in your dream, it didn't.
No.
Okay, so based off of those statements that I read, do any of those ring true for you in your waking life?
Yeah, every single one. Every single one. I was going to say there was nothing sexual in the dream, but being in this, you know, every day a little new experience in this 2 years on testosterone changing body.
Yeah.
Which they say it takes up to like 5 years to kind of like the full puberty part of it all. To finalize, that there is this, like, how do I move in this body? How do I feel attractive, sexy, sexual, you know, it's primal kind of thing. But everything else that you said, I feel, of wanting to get out there in ways to living fully. It's weird starting again, but not mm-hmm. as self, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, some of the stuff that you were saying of, like, I think of the living life to the fullest, what was it, like, kind of drive, getting out there, kind of things like that.
Yeah.
Expression.
I feel assertive, forceful, feel creative, want to live life to its fullest, want to win, succeed, achieve.
Yeah.
I have a driving desire. I need something to make me feel alive again. I need to be more assertive or forceful.
Yeah. Assertive and forceful. Those things, I hem and haw with assertiveness as it is, but I think with myself of like going, like, we're going to do this thing, or I kind of go, I'll do it later and pull it back. Even stuff that I'm excited about, I get afraid of.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's what's coming up in a way. And it also, one component of the dream makes sense of this. And this time was me trying to get into the theater to watch the show that I think I was supposed to be a part of, but I wasn't invited to.
Mm-hmm.
And I couldn't get in to find my seat.
Mm-hmm.
Because there was other things I had to go find, and I kept getting lost.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh, themes. Ooh.
Ooh, themes. So, yeah. So, if this was, like, a real therapy session,
yeah.
we would spend probably the whole 50 minutes going deeper, going deeper, going deeper. And I might keep using layers of these questions and interventions to help you figure out what is important and meaningful in this dream for you right now in your waking life.
Yeah.
And what's the connection to all these themes, to these statements, to the puns, to the emotions? How do they all come together to give you a clear message that you need to hear right now, or that you need to pay attention to in your life?
Yeah. Oh.
Oof.
Oh.
Take a breath.
Take my money.
So, I think we have to wrap up soon. Yes. So, yeah. fascinating. And that's just, I feel like we just like skimmed the surface of dream work.
Oh, yeah.
And how it can be beneficial to one's life, one's mental health, one's creative life.
Mm-hmm.
So, if you're interested, feel free to call us next time, ask questions. Do we have any resources to give our listeners if they want to dive a little deeper?
A really good expert in especially active imagination, more creative dream analysis is a guy named Robert Johnson. And he has a book that I've trained with called Inner Work. Also, a lot of good information online and so forth. Checking out Joseph Campbell and his talks and writings about archetypes and hero's journey.
Oh, yeah. The Hero's Journey is also another really good book.
Yeah.
That's just great. Ooh, maybe we should talk about the hero's journey on another show, because that's great for not only healing, but great for creativity like understanding one's full journey over life. Anyway, thank you so much for listening. We hope you have a great day and dream sweet, my friends.
Yeah.
Bye.